Welcome back to Satan's Pantry, where we I lost my train of thought. Malfunction.
Who disrupts my coronation?
Everyone has been destroyed because of this freak. I won't allow it! These babies just saved this lame death party!
You are listening to Twig, the flagship of stupidity. I am one of your hosts this week, Mike the Birdman Dodd. I am joined with
Alex.
And happy Canadian Thanksgiving to all you out there in podcast land. So hopefully
Real Thanksgiving.
Or happy Indigenous Peoples Day, to which I am a member of. If you happen to be in the Americas, as far as I know, anywhere else in the world, it's Monday. So hopefully you've had a awesome Thanksgiving. You've had lots of turkey, lots of stuffing, which I didn't get any stuffing this year, come to think of it, actually.
Oh, I should have brought you some.
Damn. Goddamn. But anyway, so yeah, I myself actually went to my first family Thanksgiving in a number of years. That was an experience, to say the very least, but I was glad to see my Aunt Barb, Kim and Jim, my cousin Brent, Tammy and Ethan. Names that mean nothing to you, but basically, in the great scheme of things, mean a lot to me and my family, so it was very cool to see them. I also got to pet an awesome labradoodle puppy named Remus, and I had this big fuzzy cat named Spooky, who basically loved me the whole time. He was this big giant furball, and he just purred in my ear the whole time and snotted on me. He was cute, though. So Blair says, Mike, I'm going to give you a cat when you go here. And she puts this giant cat on my shoulder, and we just cuddled for, like, pretty much the whole time that I was there. So that was a lot of fun. What about you? What was your Thanksgiving like?
I didn't go to last year's one. There had been some family tensions, as happens whenever families get together, and I had said, fuck it, I'm not going anywhere for, like, a year. And this time I went, you know what, I'm coming back. And I proceeded to almost destroy my grandmother's brand-new dining set, table, cabinets, the whole shebang, when my leg fell asleep and I stood up and basically almost did a header into the ground.
Oh my god, that's
brutal. And I'm like, well, there's par for the course with family get-togethers, but I took home all the turkey.
Oh my god.
Two containers worth stuffing. I'm good for like 2 days.
We didn't bring any leftovers home from our one Thanksgiving. We managed to bring some home from a previous Thanksgiving that Blair had went to. So we got this awesome roast beef we're going to have probably like tomorrow. Trying to think of what else. Tristan, who's not with the show this week, had his Thanksgiving yesterday. Evidently went really well, but he didn't get pie. His mother-in-law misread the date on the pie. Thought it said October 12th. It said October 2nd. So it was moldy. So Blair is deciding to be the MVP today and make some apple crisp. As a way of saying thank you, and we are thankful to you. In fact, I guess we should kind of... What are we thankful for this year? I'm thankful to be goddamn alive.
Yeah, that's the... I mean, I've had a massive man cold for the last week, maybe longer. I'm thankful I'm not coughing nearly as much. I'm thankful that my voice is still here. I'm thankful for all the free food.
I'm thankful to all my friends and family. I'm thankful to everybody who reached out when Logan had passed away just a couple of weeks ago. I'm very thankful to a few fans who shall remain nameless who really stepped up to the plate and really went above and beyond the call of duty. And I'm thankful to each and every one of our partners who worked with the show, from Libris Arcana, who supplies dice and role-playing books, to each of the companies who works with us to provide us with reviews, be they good, bad, or indifferent, which We got a lot of reviews in today's show. We're actually going to pack three reviews in as sort of an extra thank you and stuff you can spend your money on or not spend your money on.
And more coming this week because it is the time of year where...
Broke-tober.
Broke-tober, so there's a lot of stuff.
Oh, my God. I'm dreading this. In fact, next week on the show, I'll have my review of Assassin's Creed because that game is easily 40, 50 hours, and I'm like 20 hours into it right now. But anyway, what's coming up on the show this week? Well, we have the long-awaited review from Tristan of Destiny 2 Forsaken. We also have coming up in the news this week, a live-action adaptation of The Blue Bomber is going to be coming. Also going to talk about Xbox's venture into the game streaming service. We also have a special review of Disgaea 1 Remastered by Alex. We're also going to talk about the Fathom Events and Shout Factory put together a Transformers 1986 theatrical screening last weekend for a number of theaters across Canada and the U.S. We're also going to talk about the weird news about a guy who had a $100,000 doorstop and why you shouldn't microwave your urine.
Correct.
And we're also going to take another jaunt into Satan's Pantry. And, of course, we're going to wrap things up with a review of Sega's Fist of the North Star and give you a preview of what's coming up on the show this week. So, as always, big thanks to our sponsor of LibrisArcana.com, as they often provide us with cool things here on the show. But we will be back right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net. I've been your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd, joined with Alex the producer. We will be right back here on the flagship of stupidity as we plow forward into something utterly numbskullery.
Destiny has a long and storied history behind its development, and most of it can be sorted into either the good or the bad. Destiny 1 started mostly in the bad category, with a confusing, often disappointing endgame, and a fractured and disjointed plot, making it difficult to enjoy for pretty much everyone. It took several expansions before Destiny found its stride, and with the release of The Taken King, Destiny was reborn and finally saw success, turning around many of the issues gamers had. Destiny 2 has followed with a largely similar story, with players feeling a familiar sense of disappointment in the endgame. Rewards were uninteresting and content was scarce, and the game was plagued by a host of bugs and design flaws that took all too long to remedy. The launch of Destiny 2 also happened during what we can only hope was the peak age of microtransactions, and Destiny was counted amongst the worst offenders. Interest fell, and Destiny 2 looked like it had failed to learn from its previous mistakes. Enter 2018, and after two mediocre expansions, the Year 2 content has arrived, starting with Forsaken, an expansion that aims to be Destiny 2's Taken King. The expansion opens with the shocking demise of the beloved Cade 6, which is a bold move as Cade is essentially the mascot of the franchise. This murder sets your guardian on a path of revenge that may have you pitting your motivations against your morals as you hunt down those responsible. So the question is, has Forsaken revived Destiny 2 like the Taken King revived Destiny 1? For starters, the overall plot is more enjoyable, more personal, and more climactic than the base game, with interesting characters, mainly the Sov family, being the center of attention. If the name Sov doesn't mean anything to you, you'll still be able to enjoy it, as the plot doesn't require you to know the lore of Destiny, but those who do like to dive into the story might get some extra enjoyment out of knowing some background of the characters. While Destiny 2's original story ended with a somewhat anticlimactic battle that left the player wondering what happened, the story of Forsaken concludes with a bit of a twist, which leads you right into the true endgame experience, with additional content to keep you playing past what you thought would have been the end. The story continues to evolve, with each weekly reset revealing more, though it might take some digging and thought to understand what's going on. This is one of Destiny's strengths, and it was one of the key factors the sequel failed to bring from the original Destiny. Forsaken has brought back exploration and secret finding, and does it well. Secret finding is one of the pillars of the Destiny community, and fans are pleased with the discoveries that keep popping up as the exploration continues. Combat is largely the same as it's ever been, but Destiny's gunplay has always been very satisfying, and the ups and downs come with how that combat is applied to encounters and game mechanics. There is no shortage of interesting mechanics in Forsaken, from figuring out how to trigger the heroic version of public events, to timing jumps with your fire team to land on separate platforms at the same time in the raid. Destiny's well-known puzzles are as strong a showing as ever. One of the most popular new additions is a new play mode, Gambit. Gambit is a combination of PvE and PvP, where your team of four races against the enemy team to kill monsters, collect the motes of light they drop, and deposit them until you've collected enough to summon a big bad. Kill your big bad before the enemy team kills theirs, and you win. But it's not just that simple. You can interfere with your opponents by sending blockers to stop them from depositing their motes, or invading their team to try to kill them, Dark Souls style. Hopefully, this is just the start of Bungie adding new ways to enjoy what they've created. Destiny isn't without its flaws, though, as there are still some lingering issues with gear progression being somewhat muddy. There are activities to follow on a daily and weekly basis, but unless you do some research, you might not understand how it works. There's enough direction to know what activities to do, but there's no real way to plan out and target an upgrade you want. Weapon balance is forever being tweaked, but that's pretty standard for a shooter, and Bungie is trying to be transparent, even if some issues feel like they're taking months to be addressed. As for the original question, is Forsaken Destiny 2's Taken King? It's not a simple yes, but it is mostly a yes. It's not perfect, and it's not quite the complete 180 Taken King delivered, but it has turned Destiny 2 into a game you can enjoy playing for a long time, and that's what it needs to be. There's plenty to do now, and there's a lot more to discover. There's more content coming down the line in year 2, so Forsaken might just be the start of a new era for Destiny. Eyes up, Guardian. Until the next review, this is Mr. Tristopher for ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Need a new weapon in your battle against evil? Check out LibrisArcana.com for Canada's premier RPG dice subscription service for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping. You can get a new complete set of role-playing dice from D4s to D20s delivered straight to your door. Dice themes are new each month and can be anything your mind can imagine and beyond. Visit LibrisArcana.com and subscribe for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping and be prepared to open up new worlds of adventure. Thank you, Tristan. You can catch Destiny 2 Forsaken, available on Xbox One, PS4, and the PC. So we're going to be taking a look at all the news that happened this past week, and especially today on Thanksgiving Monday. Some of these stories are good, some of them are not so good, but we're going to give you our opinions on them nonetheless. And we're going to start things off with something that I think has the potential to be kind of neat. Depends on how they approach it. We'll find out. Hollywood is making a live-action Mega Man movie. Now, this is going to be written and directed by Henry Joost and Ariel Schumann of Paranormal Activity 3 and 4 fame. Shernan, I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing that right, the guys who produced the Planet of the Apes series, is producing the picture, along with Massey Oka, who you may remember as Hiro Nakamura from Heroes, but was also, I think he also produced Hollywood's Death Note for Netflix a little while ago.
You know what I think of when I think of him?
What?
I think it was Austin Powers' Goldmember.
Yeah, he was in that.
The Godzilla scene, but it's not. Because of the copyright reasons.
So here's how Capcom describes the live-action Mega Man. Based on the influential and globally beloved Mega Man franchise, Capcom aims to appeal to a diverse audience, including not only game players, but action movie fans as well, with an adaptation that maintains the world of the Mega Man games while incorporating the grand production and entertainment value that Hollywood movies are known for.
You know what I'm hearing from all this?
What?
What was that terrible Bomberman game on the three, or Xbox? Or
Bomberman Zero?
I have a feeling it's going to be a dark, gritty remake bullshit.
I can counter that. Now, it depends. Mega Man to me is always comes across to me as a rather kid friendly properly, right? Because it's
the why are they getting R rated directors to make it then?
Once again, it depends if they approach this, because Mega Man has been adapted rather into an R rated setting with the Tennessee based rock opera group, the Proto Men. So the material can be adapted into an R-rated setting, and it works. However, though, the problem is when you adapt the Proto Men's music, you have to read the liner notes for it to make a lot more sense. I mean, yes, it's very obvious that the Commander is rock, Proto Man is still Proto Man, Albert is Dr. Wily, stuff like that, and Dr. Light is still Dr. Light, but it helps enrich the background if you read the kind of liner notes. Otherwise, it's just a cool rock opera that lasts for like 2 hours. An R-rated Mega Man could work, but I think they should go for more kid-friendly.
Like, why wouldn't they just make a good animated picture?
I don't know. That's the thing. I mean, a live-action Mega Man has to have a good blend of CG and live-action, and you have to cast the right kid to be Rock.
I don't think it's going to be... Oh, God. You know, I was just thinking, you know how hilarious it would be? Because he's this squinched-up little guy. Why don't they just cast, like, Peter Dinklage? Hi, I'm Mega Man. Pew, pew, pew.
You know who would have made the perfect Dr. Light, but he just passed away? Scott Wilson. Because he's got the big old man friendly beard. Or,
Richard Attenborough.
Yeah. He's dead, isn't he?
Yeah.
What about the guy, Michael Gambon, from Harry Potter? The guy who played Dumbledore.
Maybe.
But you would need to cast a fairly likable, unknown kid as Rock.
Wily, you know who'd be fun as Wily if they didn't make him like Germany or anything?
Who?
Christopher Plummer.
Yeah, I could see that. Or maybe okay, if you want to go B movie terrible, Udo Kier.
Yeah,
I could see that with him.
Yeah, with a wig on and
with
stuff.
With a wig and the twirly mustache and going, Cutman, Woodman, destroy him.
But if you're trying to go more serious, like a Chris Plummer type guy.
I could totally see that. I mean, this could be a really fun kids action movie if done right. In the same vein as, like, say, Spy Kids. If they took it right. Actually, they actually should be directing it. Robert Rodriguez, a guy who gets...
Well, he's already making basically that movie with Battle Angel Alita.
Actually, that's not a bad comparison to this.
It's basically that.
Yeah, it's just... Except Alita has exceptional violence.
Yeah, and giant anime eyes.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be weird to see this when it gets up on the screen. I don't want them to screw it up. I'd rather see them take another stab at Street Fighter, because they did Assassin's Fist, and it turned out really well. Unlike The Legend of Chun-Li, which was complete crap. Although, this isn't the only Capcom franchise currently in development. I got the story from Kotaku, and I know they're making a Monster Hunter movie. And they want to have Mila Jovovich star in that. Which...
Oh, is it going to be directed by her husband who makes all the terrible...
Paul W.S. Anderson?
The bad Anderson?
See, I like the first two Resident Evil movies. After that, it gets ridiculous and so stupid. I don't get it. I mean, and to pick these two people, Paranormal Activity 3 and 4, and you're handing them... what is essentially a flagship franchise for your company as a global ambassador.
Like, yeah, and I mean, the production company making it is the one that's made the...
Planet of the Apes movies.
Which makes me think it's going to be very gray and drab and not colorful at all.
Which, like I said, I mean, if they went for the Proto-Man feel, I get that, but...
But that's not going to sell for the fans.
No, absolutely not. I mean... If you told me they made a Proto Men mini movie with these people, okay, sure. And it costs $100,000, fine. But this is going to be a multi-million dollar Hollywood project.
Like, wouldn't you want to go with, like, a DreamWorks or somebody?
Yeah, you want something very bright. Like, you want like, Pixar wouldn't touch it, but, yeah. DreamWorks
no, but like
would
a DreamWorks,
a really, really good idea.
Even Illumination?
An Illumination-made Mega Man movie would be friggin' sick. Sorry, I have to adjust my microphone here.
It's a microphone catastrophe, and I'm trying to avoid a cat from destroying my microphone here.
But, yeah, you're right, though. Just picturing the Illumination, the work that gets put behind it. You could even have a Minion cameo, and it would work well. For fun.
Was it Disney that made Wreck-It Ralph?
Yes.
Disney.
A Disney Mega Man would be kind of cool. And they already have the relationship with Capcom.
Because aren't they the ones making the Mario one?
Yeah. So why the hell not? I don't know. I mean, there isn't a lot that makes sense with this, but I guess I'm going to hold judgment until I see promotional pictures and the first full trailer. Because I thought, and this is sort of side story, I guess, if you want to call it that, this week... the first She-Ra trailer came out.
Yep.
And I said, I'm going to reserve judgment till I see the trailer, because I saw some of the pre-production artwork and I wasn't blown away. And I saw the trailer and thought, you know what? I can buy into this. I like it. Same with Mega Man. I want to see artwork. I want to see pictures. And then I want a trailer. I'll make up my mind from there. I'm not optimistic, but maybe Masioka, one of the producers, maybe he's a huge fan, and maybe he'll treat the property with respect.
I just get the feeling that you to make it look serious, if you're going that route, it's got to have a $200 million budget, because it's all future, all cyborgs, all robots. Like, it's difficult.
More sense to do Mega Man X.
Well, in that style, like, I almost feel this would be better just as an animated feature.
Yeah, and just put a lot of money behind it.
Put $100 million into it and make it a really cool animated feature.
And get some really good voice actors to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I think that'd be fantastic.
But if you're... Now, also, they're not saying that Mega... Here, the cynic of me saying that it might not even have Mega Man in it. You know what I have a feeling about that this is going to be?
The prequel?
It's going to be them as, like...
The building of
the building of, like, their discovery of building the robots, and then the end will be the last 5 minutes of the film will be Dr. Light making Mega Man.
Because if it was Proto Man's story, that might be really cool.
Because it'll be a lot of, I think it's going to be more humans, and then the robots will literally only come in the last act.
I could see the first half of the movie being. Here's how I see it working, Dr. Light. Has a son dies. He spends most of his life trying to create a robot. Second half of the movie, he creates Rock, and then he creates Proto Man, creates Rock. Third act of the movie is Rock and Proto Man fighting, and then Proto Man reveals the heart that powers you used to be mine. Because in the Mega Man lore, that Proto Man is defective. Because Light took the heart from Proto Man to power Mega Man. And he's on a limited... He's not going to live forever. So, there's a lot of drama in it. Now, I think I got the lore right. I'm not 100% on that. If I remember the games right. If I remember the Proto Man stuff right. So, I don't know. I hope there's a lot more robot action. I want to see... If I had to pick my robot masters to see on screen, I want... Elecman... Fireman, Cutman. If I had to pick from Mega Man 2.
And Gutsman.
Oh, Gutsman for sure. Because he's so iconic to the series.
Yeah.
Airman, Metalman, Bubbleman, and Quickman.
They won't do a full... They're going to do four, probably, and then one main antagonist.
I hope the main antagonist is Proto Man. It would have to be Proto Man.
And it would be like Wily has reprogrammed him or tricked him or something.
Or has turned him against Dr. Light, like the two brothers. That'd be cool. This has the potential to be cool. It likely won't be.
I'd say it has 20% of a chance to be a good movie, to be honest.
Yeah, because most video game adaptations go right down the shitter, so we'll have to wait and see. Moving on to my next story. This is kind of neat, and this comes on the heels of something Google just announced. So Microsoft has announced the Xbox game streaming service known as Project X Cloud. It basically allows you to play a quality experience of, the goal with Product X Cloud is to deliver a quality experience for all gamers on all devices that's consistent with the speed and high fidelity gamers experience and expect on their PCs and consoles. So they want you to be able to play, say, Forza Horizon on your phone, play Halo on your phone. I don't know how this is gonna. I don't get the idea of game streaming services.
It's the latency that's an issue. Like, the thing is, it's actually probably not a big issue in Canada, because we actually have on average faster internet than they do in the States.
Which is weird, because I always thought they had like Google Fiber and all that.
But remember, like, as big as Canada is, our population is 90 to 95% along the 100 kilometers to the border.
Yeah.
So we're congested in larger cities. You know, rurally, if you live out in the middle of the boonies, you're probably screwed. But in the States, the average person still only has 5 or 6 megabit connections. And in Canada, the average connection for internet is between 60 and a gigabit. Like anywhere upward of 60.
See, one of my issues with this is I'd be very curious to see which games are going to offer. I know Google is offering to put Assassin's Creed Odyssey out on their service.
It's already out.
Chrome. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't see a fighting game working with this because of latency issues. And I can't see a shooter working with it. Due
basically,
to
strategy,
issues.
RPGs.
Racing,
like
maybe.
The Telltale story-based sort of games will work.
Anything single player.
Things that are Twitch will have issues, like Twitch gaming. Not Twitch, the streaming service.
Yeah.
But anything that's Twitch gaming will have issues. Anything that requires a lot of precise, like quick time events will have issues.
So stuff like Fortnite but now, and Call
now,
of Duty.
Now, it's about reducing that latency. So how much of it's done on the server side? Like, if you're doing it through Google, there's a possibility that it'll be faster because most of your browsing, depending on if you set your... It's a little detail-oriented, but if you set your DNS server settings to go through the Google servers, it might be a little quicker with latency back and forth. But it'll work well in Europe. It'll work well in Canada. And, you know, for our American listeners, you may be surprised that your internet is probably the worst of the first world countries. Your infrastructure just isn't there yet.
Which is so strange, because I thought for years that America had superior
internet.
If
you live in, like, Dallas, or you live in New York, but the problem is, in most states, there's not a limit on how many cable companies can run wires. So you could have four cable companies running their own wires with their own separate internet connections. It's just, it's a mess.
Oh, right, because you got Comcast, Time Warner.
And they'll all have their own lines. It's not like here, where Rogers owns the line, and other companies can lease off of it. So there's less congestion.
Okay, I read you.
And also, we had cable internet here in like 99 or 98. Like,
yeah, 99.
Way before, and that was like, and I'm not talking like just in the biggest cities. Almost every city could get it.
Yeah, I had it
so
up when I lived, you know,
it was
town.
Like 3 megabit, but that was at a time when 56K was common, right? So
yeah,
we just happened to be farther ahead with internet. Always have
been. That's so strange.
And also a big thing in the States, even in the cities, is most people just use Wi-Fi now. So they got the router set up, their modem set up with the router, but they don't have anything wired in. You're pretty much, to guarantee low latency, you're going to have to be using a gigabit Ethernet connection, which you have and I have, and anybody that's a big enthusiast or a creator is going to have plugged in, but you're going to have to be plugged in.
Yeah.
Like, wireless is unreliable for that sort of service.
Absolutely, yeah. So I guess we'll see what happens. I think they're hoping to have this in public beta at some point next year, so we'll have to wait and see what happens with Project xCloud.
Yeah, my best estimate, we're probably about 5 years away from the infrastructure being there for most people.
Yeah. So, coming up here on the show, we're actually going to take a small break here on the show and give you a review that Alex did of Disgaea 1 Remastered. When we come back, we're going to talk about a Transformers screening that happened recently in Canada and the U.S., and Alex and I had the privilege to attend. We'll be back right here on Twig, the flagship of stupidity.
Here is a quickie review of Disgaea 1 Complete Edition, brought to you by NAS America. Now, Disgaea 1, if you remember, was back on the PS2 era. It was one of the first strategy RPGs that I had played, personally, other than maybe Final Fantasy Tactics. And it was actually the first RPG I can say actually made me laugh out loud. It was full of really funny plots. The Prinnies were interesting when they introduced those characters. Little penguin characters, and I don't need to go much more into this because this game is a classic of the genre. Now, what have they done? Well, they've included extra levels, extra items and things to do in this Switch version. Now, they've also gone and made it in HD, so it has had a visual makeover, and because of the art style of the original game, it suits it because it is that cartoony, very vibrant sprite-based graphics, and the audio sounds just as good as I remember on PS2, so the comparisons are mostly going to be on the visual end, and it's something that really did deserve a visual upgrade, because the original being, you know, 480i in full screen, this is playing, you know, in full HD widescreen, and it works perfectly great. It's a game you're going to be able to sink potentially, I guess, 1,000 hours or more into if you wanted to keep playing and going into the item dungeons for each item to level them up. There's so much to do and play in this game, and it's perfect for on the go, because it is the kind of game where you're going to play a match that could last 5 or 10 minutes, and then you could suspend it and take it on the bus, take it in your car, take it to work, and play it at lunch. It's going to be something that is not for everybody, in that it's very in-depth, and it's a very niche title, because it is a strategy RPG that has millions of numbers being thrown up on the screen. So if you're a math nut, you're going to love this game. If you want something that's straightforward action slash, you know, beat 'em up, this is not the game for you. So I would say I recommend it to those that are fans of the genre.
So if you happen to live in Canada and the US, there was this awesome special event screening put on by Fathom Events and Shout Factory for a rather big movie, if you may remember. Transformers, the movie came out back in 1986. So this is what, 33rd anniversary or something like that? 32nd.
Well, 32nd, yeah.
And it's a big deal because this movie hasn't been screened on a large screen that often.
Yeah, like your local, if you have a city that has like an art theater or one of those, you know, independently runs, occasionally, maybe. But that would just be usually them broadcasting the Blu-ray of it or something to that extent. But not on, you know, a large scale with major theaters.
Yeah, exactly. So this was screened at, I want to say, well over 300 screens across Canada and the US.
I think it was 400 between the two countries.
Which I think was rather impressive, the fact that this was screening at all. And I know later on this year they're bringing back Batman Mask of the Phantasm, which I think airs in November. But this is a big deal because this is a big year for Transformers, because we have Bumblebee coming out in December with John Cena. And this is supposed to be a soft reboot of the Transformers universe. Because I remember for years they said the Transformers G1 designs will not work on the screen. Yet in the Transformers Bumblebee trailer, they look amazing.
That's Michael Bay being
a cocky ass.
Okay, that's a nicer way of putting what I was going to say.
Yeah, like, some of the Bayformers don't look terrible, but I don't like...
They all look the same.
You can't see the faces.
They all look the same. There's no color code. If you're going to have a bunch of sharp, random, jaggedy edges all over them, they have to be color coded or you can't see what they're doing.
Yeah, like, one of the worst designs is Megatron in the entire Transformers franchise.
Or Junkatron?
Yeah, like, I can't tell worse faces.
He's made out of scrap metal. That's what it looks like.
And Hugo Weaving wasn't a bad choice for the voice, but still.
Also, Optimus having the moving lips was weird.
Yeah, instead of just the faceplate, and only came out during battle. And even then, they had to fight for that, I hear. But anyway, at hand, the 1986 movie screened, and what we saw was not just someone popping in the Blu-ray. No, we actually saw an actual theatrical cut.
Yeah, and it actually had film grain, and there were some areas that were blurry, which wasn't an issue with the picture itself. It means that it was film stock that was used.
Yeah.
Like, and to not to mention, somebody like myself, like, I've seen the movie probably 400 times, easily 400 or 500 times. As a kid, I would watch it 2 times or 3 times after school every day in kindergarten and grade one. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, it was ridiculous. Like,
I started watching it more when I was later in life, because I finally got a copy of the Blu-ray from the UK. And then there was the Rhino release in the early 2000s. I had that.
Yeah. I still have my beta cassette somewhere, but it watching it, there was some slight differences from the video releases. And I've seen
a couple frames here and there.
Yeah, the beta, the VHS. I've had the Rhino release. I've had the Sony release. I've had the UK Blu-ray. I've had
the new Shout Factory.
I don't have the new Shout.
The new Shout Factory release is quite good.
But in watching it, the colors were like... The reds were red, the way they were supposed to be, so it wasn't like there was a whole shift, but then Hot Rod had 2 different tones.
Yeah.
There was clearly, this was from a multi-generational print. I thought this was going to be a full remastered print, but it wasn't.
Yeah, like...
The audio was remastered.
Yes.
You could tell, you could hear things that you couldn't normally hear in the other prints. In fact, certain things that were in the background were brought a little more forward, or cleared up a little bit. Some of Cup's dialogue, specifically... The underwater just talking parts were a little different. There was a line or two missing.
Yeah, like I can't tell you specifically what they were, but if you've seen the movie enough times, you know something seems off.
And you know the pacing where the words come to your head before they happen, and they didn't happen.
Yeah, you're like, you're just off by just a couple of seconds. And you're like, okay, that's a little
yeah, a couple, not any different shots as far as video, just some color and detail differences. The one thing, I've seen the movie hundreds of times, and it was the first time I'd ever noticed that when Galvatron gets his ship, I thought he uses his gun to laser up and go inside of the ship. No, he stands on top of it as
yeah,
it flies
I never
by.
Noticed that.
And I've seen the Blu-ray, and I've watched it really close, but having it on a screen that big, you could see all the little details.
Yeah, I thought that was spectacularly cool how they like did that. There's just so many emotions I felt while watching this movie, because I said on social media, at Birdman Dodd, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, I've waited 30 years plus to see this movie. And when Optimus died, and I knew it was coming, I've seen this movie a couple hundred times, still cried.
I almost laughed.
When
I looked over and I'm like, is he crying?
You damn right I am. I was just so thrilled. And then hearing the lion theme for Transformers pop up on the screen, hearing the touch when Optimus says Megatron must be stopped no matter the cost, and the touch hits. I have never heard the touch that loud outside of one other time in my life. When I got married back in 2011, I walked into my hall to the touch, and Stan Bush did music for me, and it was one of the proudest moments of my life, was walking into that hall to the touch. Seeing Transformers up on the screen is literally, and it's going to sound so dumb, but it's comparable to when I got married, because I've waited for that moment for so many years. And I never thought I'd see Transformers with essentially my best friend. Now, my friend Jen, who I know from college, came up and was visiting there. And I said to her, I'm really happy you're here. I get to share something with you I've never thought I'd share with anybody else.
And it was pretty packed, actually.
It was. It was surprisingly full. And I said maybe there'll be 10 people.
Kids that have never seen it, adults that had seen it many, many times. We had some of the idiots that decided to, you know, like, put their feet up and stuff. And
yeah, somebody kicked me in the back of the head.
Yeah.
Why do you kick a crippled guy?
Yeah, I almost wanted to slap a few people, but that's become the movie theater standard, I noticed lately, unless you go during a matinee. Now, like, people singing along with the songs were funny. Now, the only thing is, I'm calling you out, motherfucker. You clapped like an American at the end of the movie. What is it with Americans that clap at the end of the movie? They can't hear you.
The movies I've clapped for is this, Transformers 2007 when it came out, because the theater did, Star Wars, and Avengers Infinity War.
But I don't understand it. They can't hear you.
It's just part of the experience. I think, depending on the audience you're with, some people just really respect that.
But I've just noticed that that's a very American thing.
I don't know. I've seen it a number of times. I think it's a North American thing now.
No. I refuse. Refuse to accept that.
I don't know. Every Marvel movie I've gone to on opening night, people clap now.
The only time I've clapped at a movie, I went and saw a silent film by Buster Keaton that... the score was done by a local, like the Philharmonic Orchestra was done.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, they're playing live, so I got to clap. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I'm only calling you out because I thought it was funny. I'm like, am I the only one not clapping at the end of the movie?
I think so. And that's another thing, too. They included stuff at the end of the movie, which I thought was kind of nice.
Well, sorry, actually, it started beforehand. They had the normal movie trailers, and then they showed a 5-minute preview of Bumblebee and got me actually interested. It's clearly for the fans. The director of this is not associated with Michael Bay's company. In fact, he's the creator of Leica Studio. Mm-hmm. Like, they're the ones that did
Coraline, isn't it?
Coraline, Paranorman, Box Trolls. He's a claymation director.
Yeah, he gets it.
And they, what they show is they were building props. Bumblebee's hand is real. Like when people are interacting with them, it's a real prop, which they didn't do in the previous films. So... This is somebody who knows animation, who knows stop motion, who knows how to make inanimate objects look like they have emotion.
Yeah, like he knows how to...
I think Bumblebee just went by.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Hot Rod. But yeah, it's stuff like that that I think this director may be the one to break the Transformers curse. Because I've refused to watch Transformers The Last Night.
Oh, it's hilarious. It's incredibly bad.
I hear it's 2.5
bad.
Hours of boring.
It involves the Knights of the Round Table, Merlin the Magician.
And somehow a Quintesson known as Quintessa or something?
No, there is no Quintessa. Quintessa is the only Quintesson.
That's so stupid.
And the Earth is Unicron.
Oh, get the fuck out. And Optimus is evil for half the movie or something?
And, because he gets mind-controlled by Quintessa. And
fuck me.
But Anthony Hopkins gets a bulldog and uses a gun to fight off... he's basically a Knight Templar.
See, you know what sucks? Those movies lost their way after Dark of the Moon. Age of Extinction had a cool setup for the first 20 minutes where they had, like, Cemetery Wind was hunting down rogue Transformers, like how they killed Ratchet.
And the Dinobots were okay.
But they didn't do anything, which pissed me off.
Oh, and yeah.
Yeah. Although the idea of a Transformer bounty hunter I thought was neat.
But in the newest one, Mark Wahlberg gets to wield Excalibur to fight off the Transformers.
Jesus
Christ. I'm not fucking kidding.
That's so stupid. But at least the 1986 movie, while it does have its cinematic flaw, it's by no means a perfect movie. By no means. But no. It's fun. It keeps you engaged. Nothing stops. Actually, that's something Jen said to me. She's like, I was watching this movie, and the movie didn't stop. For 86 minutes or however long
it was. Yeah, and the music never stops. And also, this was a theatrical cut, because at the end it didn't have the Optimus Will Return.
Yes, it's true, because that wasn't even confirmed until season 3 of the Transformers, because they had to see the backlash from when they killed Duke, and they're like, oh, fuck, we got to make sure Duke
they
back.
Killed Optimus.
Yeah, and then they reversed killing Duke.
They reversed killing Duke, that's and then it. Put that in the VHS release. Now, you were saying at the end of it, there was a couple, they had a special for about 10 minutes or so that aired afterwards, after the credits rolled.
Yeah, and that was Stan Bush, who was the original musician for the Touch and Dare, talking about how Touch was originally for Cobra, which was a Sylvester Stallone movie coming out at about
It wouldn't
same
have
time.
Fit.
Yeah, I can't see how that would have fit.
Would it have been like when he's fucking his wife?
See, that's what I don't get.
Because he married her after that movie.
Yeah.
So would it have been like for a boning scene?
Maybe the end credits, maybe.
Yeah, but it wouldn't have worked.
But, so Stan's talking about how it's always about going for it, believing in yourself.
He plays an acoustic rendition of it.
Which was, I thought, really cool. You can see he's just outside at, like, a party, probably at Shout Factory for this.
Well, they were in a booth, I think it was for BotCon or something. Because it looked like he was recording footage for something, like, for something. I don't think it's included on any current video release,
I've
but it probably will be.
I've never seen this footage
before. And it said copyright 2018, but it was Shout Factory was the copyright on it.
Yeah, because we saw the name
so
Brian Ward.
So don't be surprised if there's like a 4K release or something comes out soon.
Yeah, there'll be something for this movie.
He plays...
Dare.
Which I didn't realize he didn't write.
Yeah, it was Vince DiCola? No.
Yeah, it was Vince DiCola, but he played it. It was somebody else and Vince DiCola made it, I think. Or wrote it for him.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was always an original song of his, but it wasn't.
Yeah, so it was very awesome. They also gave out posters
at the end,
which were very nice.
Yeah, they're...
They're the box art from the Shout Factory release.
Yeah, it's not the original poster, like for the original theatrical release, but they're not the full size, like the wall scroll. They're the ones you get when you order like a... The ones that you can get in like Blu-ray sets sometimes that fold out.
Yeah.
Or that you get when you buy a video game sometimes. So I think they're, just looking at it, 2 feet by 1?
18.
Yeah, like a 2 by 1 ratio or something?
Something like that. Like, they're not the full-size movie
poster. The half-size movie poster.
Yeah, so good size for a locker, basically. Those are our thoughts on Transformers, the movie in 1986. Thank you, Shout Factory and Fathom Events for... putting this on.
Yeah, and I hope there's a lot more. And unlike a lot of times when they put these special events, I'm saying in quotes, out where you have to pay like $15 a ticket, this was a regular ticket price.
Yeah. And it's, as of this recording, it's playing again right now in our city. Yeah. So they had it on for kids for Thanksgiving. So I'm thankful for that. I really am. So we'll be back here, right here on Twig, as we turn things over to the nerd weird news this week. We'll be back, guys, right after this.
Continue observation.
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
And here we are talking about the weird, the wacky, the strange, and just plain fucked up, because believe me, I've done this more times than I want to remember. This is the weird news. And what's happened in the world this week? Well, as you can guess, here on good old planet Earth, things are strange. And what would you do, Alex, if I told you you've had $100,000 sitting in front of your house?
So it's just sitting there?
Just sitting there, as a doorstop.
First thought is cartel money. So I would be a little nervous. I would probably... $100,000 and you know it's $100,000?
Like,
yep. You count it?
Yep. So what
I would hide that shit, not spend a penny, and see what happens.
So here's what happened. A Michigan man recently learned that a 22-pound rock he'd used for decades as a doorstop was in fact a meteorite worth over $100,000. According to a Central Michigan University press release, the man who asked to remain anonymous obtained the meteorite in 1988 when he bought a farm in Edmore, Michigan, about 30 miles southwest of Mount Pleasant. As the farmer was showing him around the property, they went out to a shed. The man asked about the large, odd-looking rock that was holding the door open. He's like, a meteorite, the farmer said, matter-of-factly. He went on to say that in the 1930s, he and his father saw it come down at night on their property, and it made a heck of a noise when it hit. In the morning, they found the crater and dug it out, and it was still warm. The farmer told the man that it was part of the property, and he could have it. The man brought the rock into the Central Michigan University Geology, allow me to read that again, because I'm getting all my words running together. The man brought the rock into Central Michigan University geologist Mona, I can't pronounce her last name. She analyzed a slice of the rock and performed an X-ray analysis. Its composition is 88% iron, 12% nickel, and it proved authentic. And an analysis at the Smithsonian verified the conclusion. So, evidently, you can buy meteorites, and they go anywhere from 50 cents to $5 per gram. The estimated rock, this 22-pound rock, is worth over $10 per gram. So I'm going to show Alex a picture of this.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
That's a meteorite. That thing was around when the planets were formed. That's astounding to me, that how people can see things and find things like this. Like, when I was a kid, I remember this very, very clearly. I was out skating on my friend's rink, and we're playing hockey. It's the middle of, like, December or something. And I look up, and all of us see this green shooting star in the sky. We hear as it broke the sound barrier. So we saw an actual meteorite or meteor or whatever go across the sky, and I always wondered where it went down. But this would have been in 1996. When I saw this happen. But still, I always thought it was cool. Like, have you seen, like, shooting stars and stuff like that?
Yeah, occasionally when I go to my grandparents' cottage as a little kid, because it's way clearer.
Yeah, because
but,
you know.
But
have
I mean,
the light
I never saw it land, like, just across the sky.
I remember when there was the Russian meteorite from a couple of years ago that shattered all those buildings' glasses and stuff like that. It was captured on countless dash cams. Or there was a meteorite that almost caused a nuclear war back in the 80s when it set off early warning systems in Russia.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, shit. Until someone made a phone call and like, guys, that's not a missile.
Oh, that's where they had to call. I remember they had to call the states and be like, if we launch a nuke, it's not us. We didn't mean to.
Exactly. Guys, just chill the fuck out. Chill. But yeah, I thought that's cool. Just the fact that this guy has this meteorite just sitting there. I wonder if this guy's going to sell it.
I wonder, yeah.
Like $100,000 for a doorstop?
I mean, sure.
Yeah, take it. I'm going to go. Well, it's not enough to retire on, but it's definitely enough to go do something cool.
It's enough to improve his farm.
Yeah. So, yeah, there we go.
And that's pretty much it with that one, right?
Now, according to this, this will be the final part of my story. The Smithsonian and a Maine museum are considering purchasing this rock. I think the Smithsonian should, because that's a pretty big meteorite.
Well, it's a substantial one. Usually they're a lot smaller.
Yeah, their size are like baseballs. And the fact that this survived intact, more or less, I think that's cool.
You know what? Somebody or some private collector will get it.
Yeah, or some. Yeah, exactly. And someone will probably pay like triple the price.
Yeah.
Maybe. Because that's weird. Because, hell, you can buy dinosaur bones, although you're not supposed to.
No?
No. Like, yeah, there's some weird international law. I think if what I've heard is correct, if I wanted to buy a skeleton of, like, say, a T-Rex or something, I can't do it legally. You have to go through, like, a gray market.
Maybe, yeah.
Because it's kind of like a protected...
Oh, it's like it's owned technically by the government?
Yeah, technically. And I don't know. It's weird. I'm surprised the government didn't just step in and say ours. But it's a rock.
I think you could claim basically ownership because it had been on the property for... private property for, like...
decades.
Like 50 years?
Yeah, like 1930s and now like, it's 2000.
Yeah, it was 50 years before that person even acquired it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's long enough that they can't claim it.
Still, 1930 to now, it's just holding open my shed.
Wow.
That's cool. Anyway, Jesus. Go on.
Yeah, I have a couple. I have one short little quick one, and then one that's a little... I guess two little quick ones, actually.
Okay.
So, we've got Shopify, who is going to be handling... That's the big e-commerce company that handles... Like, when you go to a website and people have, like, buy my merch, generally they're the ones that run the store.
Yeah.
Or build the website for you.
Mm-hmm.
They're now based out of Waterloo, Ontario, Canada, for their worldwide operations. Excuse me, I'm probably going to have to cough.
Okay.
Wow, the cold's still here. Anywho's it. So Shopify is going to be handling the Canada-wide distribution of cannabis now that it's becoming legalized as of, I believe it's next week.
Yeah, October 17th.
So, you know, for anybody in the States that's been living under a rock, Canada is going to have legal weed, not just for medical purposes. We're talking recreation across the board. Anybody, tourists, come on up. Unless you live in the States and are afraid you might not be let back into your own country.
Which is a very realistic possibility.
But here, when asked if they think that their website might crash, like their services might crash because of the influx of people on the first day, their response was, no, if we can handle Kylie Jenner's service, we can handle this. And I went, what the hell does that mean? Kylie Jenner has a range of like makeup cosmetic products that are selling 2,000 to 3,000 products, individual orders, per second.
Jesus Christ.
That are being processed through. Every time, that's when a new product launches. So it slows down afterwards. But they're selling thousands per minute.
That's
insane. And I'm thinking, that sounds crazy. But Shopify has all the numbers. And they're saying, if we can handle that, there's no way that weed's going to be as popular as Kylie Jenner's products. And I thought that was kind of funny and weird and sad.
Yeah, that's kind of... It's going to be an interesting time to live in this country, considering we've all grew up on the war on drugs, and marijuana is bad.
And I mean, and I'm willing to say probably about 7 out of 10 high school students have smoked weed at least once.
Yeah, I mean,
anyway,
everybody's
like,
tried it.
Or been around it. It's a thing. But interestingly here, just to clarify, the only way to purchase marijuana, at least in Ontario, will be through this website that they're running. You cannot go in person until at least April.
They're still trying to figure out the private sales.
Yeah, so it's going to be, you know, it's all online orders. So that's why people are like, are we going to get 1,000,000 orders at once? And they're like, we can handle it.
And it's funny because supposedly, if you buy it, right, because Shopify, that's going to be a credit card. That's not cash.
Credit card, or it'll be debit, or I'm thinking, they haven't announced the payment options. It's probably going to be e-transfers involved, like, as well.
Because I've never seen a commerce website accept an e-transfer.
But this is going to be government run.
Okay, but even still, that takes a while.
Not e-transfer as in like transferring to a person. E-check.
Okay.
Yeah, and they also have not announced if they're going to accept PayPal.
I doubt PayPal. I doubt they want to dip their toes into this. The reason I bring that up is because I remember hearing this from a friend of mine, actually, very, very recently. You may not be able to go back to the States if they see you have weed transactions on via
it's
credit
not
cards.
For the Americans, it's for Canadians wanting to enter.
Yeah, which is so stupid.
Like they'll see that, and you can get a lifetime ban.
And all it takes is the one asshole border guard.
Under the Trump administration currently.
Yeah.
Even though it's completely legal within our country.
Yeah, so I wonder how that affects people who go, like, international.
I can guarantee you they're going to be checking every Canadian's car for the first month or two going over.
Oh, probably much longer than that.
So it's going to be more restricted, but I mean, I'm not going to the States anytime soon.
Nope, neither am I.
So that's pretty much that. Just funny, sort of weird. I thought it was funny just how they announced that if we can handle Kylie Jenner, we can handle weed. And my second story is, don't microwave your pee. Jacksonville gas station owner's bizarre request.
Okay.
So, Florida.
Of course.
Okay, preface for Florida. There is a gas station, convenience store, that is equal walking distance between two different drug testing labs. And they had to put a sign on their microwave that stated, only for food, do not warm urine, keep this place microwave clean, thank you very much. Because people had been warming up their pee in there for some reason.
Does that affect the drug test?
Well, I think they were probably buying somebody's cold pee and then heating it up to make it feel warm. So it looks like it was... Basically, people were trying to bring untainted pee in.
Just the smell of microwaved piss.
Yeah, or it spilled over. And all I can think of was, like, that had to be a thing, and I'm like, Florida.
Yeah, Florida. Maybe California. Maybe.
No, not California. They don't microwave their pee. It's all organic and grass-fed pee.
Pure organic urine.
Gluten-free piss.
So that's some of the stories that we've had this week here on the show, from $100,000 rock to pee and weed.
Yeah.
It's been weird, as it always is. But we'll be back as we take a visit to Satan's Pantry and a final review on the show of Fist of the North Star from Sega. We'll be back, guys, right after this, only on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Welcome to hell.
You wouldn't serve it to a pig. It's inedible.
Welcome back to Satan's Pantry, where we find the good, the bad, the ugly in your international grocer's aisle. Do we find anything good on this show? Actually, the last few weeks we've been batting pretty good. Although we have had one... Ew. I'm still tasting it to this very day.
For you.
It's
for
a me, personal taste.
Personal
thing.
Taste. It's so refreshing. You know what else is I don't know what we're going to have this week, because Alex is still in charge of this, and I'm afraid...
We have Lala potato crisps, no trans fat cholesterol, teriyaki chicken flavor.
Okay.
Now, what do we got here? It's from trademark
like
Newton Supreme
bag.
Quality. Where is this from?
Made out of real Lala.
Philippines.
Oh, okay.
It's Filipino. These chips are good till March of next year.
Loaded with preservatives.
Ingredients: dehydrated potatoes, cassava.
I don't know what that
I've
is.
I've heard of it, but I know nothing about it.
Potato starch. Yeah, cassava is... you can get cassava chips at grocery
right in
stores.
Your hand.
No. No, they're usually... they're shaved, and they... Like, think if coconut chips were, like, wider. If coconut chips were the size of, like... I don't know. Like, you know when you shave an apple, or you peel an apple?
Okay.
The peel?
Okay.
That's sort of the thickness of those chips. And they're usually they're white and very thin, and you can get them in spicy and non-spicy garlic flavors. They're usually in the produce section of a grocery store, where they'll have, like, the peanuts and stuff. Like
The bulk foods and stuff.
No, not bulk. Like, when you go into, like, a Food Basics is probably the easiest place to find it. You'll walk in, and on the end of the aisle, they'll have, like, spicy peanuts in the shell.
Okay.
That sort of
okay.
stuff. Those packages, like, are the ones that are, like, the... they'll have, like, the Blue Jays logo on it.
Yeah,
or
salty snacks.
Yes,
and
or they'll have the plantain chips and stuff. That's,
yeah,
they'll have
stuff
cassava
that's
there.
Not chips, that's salty snacks.
Yeah, so that rice flour, it's got everything in it.
Literally everything. It is made of everything.
Chicken teriyaki. Oh, yeah.
Especially.
This has got all the MSG. So
there's your March expiry date while eating it in August.
Yes.
Bang it open.
March of next year. Here on Satan's Pantry, we try not to eat expired food. That's not really the goal.
Oh, you know what they look like?
No,
weird. They look weird. They don't look like chips. You know when...
They're crisps.
what's that meant? Munchies? The potato chips?
Okay, yeah, they're almost like perfectly round, like they're almost too perfect.
Oh, they're crisps, literal crisps.
Yeah, they're thicker than potato chips in the standard...
Thicker than Olay, but not as crunchy as a Ruffle.
Yeah. Like those pork things.
Pork rinds, yeah. In a way.
Oh, pork rinds are gross.
They're a little thicker. They're not as thick as a pita chip.
They look like they're good for dip.
Yeah.
Are they strong enough for dipping?
No, they're crumblier. Munchies, yeah, you know the ones that, those chips, they come in that orangey red
they
bag.
They smell vaguely of those prawn chips we had.
Oh, they won't be. It's barbecue.
All right. I got a handful. Whoops.
They are not very strong.
I kind of have a very airy.
They're very, very light, fluffy.
Yeah, they're not nearly as potent as I would have figured.
Yeah, I was hoping for more.
Oh well,
I dropped the bag. Teriyaki. I'll get it after.
I got it.
Between the chair and the thing.
That's why you guys brought me down here.
I don't know. They're very plain.
Yeah, I'm finding them kind of boring, to be honest.
I had MSG.
I had
oh
my
yeah,
hopes
there's
for
a lot of those. So if you're sensitive to MSG, don't eat these. I don't
these
think they're strong enough to hold hummus.
These wouldn't be half bad if you made like your homemade bits and bites and you mixed it in with that.
Yeah, because they're very salty.
Hmm. Or you know what? If you popped some popcorn and mixed it in with some peanuts, popcorn, and this, and even if it crumbled a bit, if you grabbed a handful, it'd be the right texture.
Yeah.
It is very crunchy.
Yeah, you can definitely hear us crunching on mine.
It's crunching. It's soft at the same time. Like, it's not literally soft, but it feels very airy, so you're able to crunch through it without a lot of effort. It's easy to eat, but there's not really a lot of flavor to it, so by itself, I'm not enjoying it that much.
Barbecue munchies are I think they're called munchies.
You're thinking of munchies.
They're like, yeah, that's the closest.
They're oval, in almost perfectly oval.
Yes, and they're puffed ever so slightly.
Yeah.
They're always in the aisle for like $2 with the Chester... the cheese popcorn.
Or they're hanging off the edge of a shelf next to nothing else that belongs with it.
Yeah, like that and like rolled gold the pretzels. Yeah, so it's that, but not that exact same texture. Not as crunchy as that. It's weird. It's sort of unique.
Yeah, it's got a good texture, very one of a kind, but the flavor is really
If they
too
blasted
light.
This with like 3 times the flavoring, it'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, honestly, if you just gave it more flavor, I taste more barbecue than... chicken?
Yeah, chicken or teriyaki.
Well, it didn't really taste like teriyaki at all.
I didn't really
invoke
that.
I taste it a little
bit,
but not a lot. Honestly, yeah. Kind of sad. Kind
of
disappointing.
It's sort of it's like when you go to the store and you buy like a ketchup chips and you expect it to be great and you look in the bag and you see no red.
Yeah, there's just a tiny little dusting of it
and
everything's
no,
just plain, essentially.
You betrayed me for the last time, no-name brand.
So... overall, I'm going to call this one a miss.
Yeah, this was definitely not a hit. So
it's not gross. It's just bland and
yeah,
boring.
It's store brand. Like I'm assuming if there was another company that made the same flavor of chip, you probably would be fine if it was stronger. That's about it.
Yeah, it definitely needs a blast
yeah.
of flavor. So that's what we got on this edition of Satan's Pantry. What's coming up next week? I do not entirely know, but either way, I'm remarkably terrified of it. So we'll be back right here on This Week in Geek, the flagship of stupidity.
Overcooked on the bottom, crispy as fuck, and it looks like Gandhi's flip-flop. What a shame.
Hey everyone, I'll have to apologize for my voice sounding off. I have had a bit of a cold for the last probably a week or so, stupid weather changing. But what have I been doing to sort of get over this? I've been bundling up, making sure I have plenty of soup, some cough candies, and playing the new Paradise Lost game, the Fist of the North Star Paradise Lost for the PS4. It is an exclusive title made by the Sega Yakuza team. Now, this is something that sort of is going to fly under the radar, I think, for a lot of people, in that it wasn't really heavily advertised, but it's something that's really, really cool. I've not been somebody who's followed the Fist of the North Star anime or the manga, but I've heard of bits and pieces. I remember seeing the really horrible live-action American movie that came out in like 94 or 95 and laughing my butt off at how crazy it was. But the basic story is it's the Road Warrior meets Kung Fu, as in the Kung Fu TV show. So you play as Kenshiro, who is wandering the post-apocalyptic, post-nuclear desert wasteland, trying to find your fiance who has been kidnapped, and you're basically on a revenge sort of journey. Along the way, you're trying to help everybody that you can. So it is very, very Kung Fu meets Mad Max. Now, the graphics in the game are some of the best I've seen for an anime adaptation, in that it doesn't look hyper-realistic. It looks hyper-realistic for an anime, if that makes any sense. So the graphics are clean and pretty good. Make use of the PS4. I don't see anything PS4 Pro enhanced with it, but it does make use of the PS4. This is something that wouldn't have appeared on the previous generation of systems. The music is interesting in that it takes a bit, I think, from the original anime from the 80s, and then it has some remixes. There's parts of the game where you get to drive around in a dune buggy, and it plays the, I guess, recordings like 8-track tapes or something. And it has songs from Super Monkey Ball, some from other Sega titles. So it's pretty cool. And then one that I believe is one of the themes from the Fist of the North Star movie, the anime movie that came out. So I'm not 100% sure, but that's sort of what it pops up and says on the screen. So they're pretty fun, and it's like this crazy King Diamond inspired, you know, screaming, high-pitched falsetto vocals. And it brings together, it feels like, you remember when that Mad Max game came out for Fury Road, and it was sort of blah? This is like, what if you took that and made it into a good game, an actual fun game? So it has a bit of the Yakuza slash GTA style gameplay, in that you wander around your town, you get side missions. It's got an RPG aspect where you're leveling up different aspects of your character to do extra moves. Fairly complex battle system, super hyper gory graphics. We're talking like people's heads exploding, bodies exploding. The whole point of this is to make all the meat explode. You then go around and act out. It's not parts from the actual anime. It has deviated from it, but it includes characters from the anime manga series in sort of a new interpretation of the story. I won't spoil too much because fans of the series, you're going to get something new in this, and people that aren't fans of the series that are new are going to want to actually play it because it's actually a pretty cool story. Big thing here is everything is voice acted completely. Now, as far as I know, I don't think the Yakuza games previously have been dubbed. None of the ones I have played have been. But this was a full dub. Everything is voice acted. There are aspects in the game where you're talking to people and they'll have like inflections they say, but not the full dialogue. But all the cutscenes, all the story elements, everything like that is fully dubbed in English in surround sound. And it sounds fantastic. There's nobody in the voice acting crew that phoned it in. It's very, very good. There's a ton to this game. So you've got your wandering around action, kung fu, RPG elements. You've got your wandering through the desert in your car driving segments where you're doing race. There's racing mini games. There's other jobs that you can take on in the town. Like you can become the manager of a, I guess it's a nightclub where you get to, you're in charge of the hostess girls and you've got to make sure that they're happy and they can take care of the customers. There's a part where you become a bartender, which is ridiculous because some of the missions in there are like shake the controller to shake up the drink, spin it, and it's just over the top cartoony, crazy, zany, only in Japanese game scenarios. You then also can become a doctor who heals by pressing buttons to a rhythm music game, sort of like the Persona series, like the Persona Dancing All Night games. You can also you can perform races like in the actual Badlands, but you can then go back and actually tune up your car and race on specific tracks within the world. There's a casino, which is a staple of most RPGs, which is, it's actually a pretty well-rendered casino. Some of the games, I don't even know how to play Baccarat. I also have no idea how roulette properly works and how to place a proper bet. So, but it has poker and all your other standard stuff in there. Then there's other mini games that involve taking down bounties, like you're a bounty hunter for some extra missions. And the last thing that was introduced later on in the game is there's an arcade, and you can go into the Badlands and find treasure chests and using treasure maps, and you can recover arcade games. I recovered Outrun, and it has like a fully rendered Outrun cabinet, and you get to go into the game and play it, and it has like full rendered arcade games within this game, which I know has been a staple of games like the Shenmue and Yakuza series before. So there is a ton of content here, and I played it on two different difficulties. I played it on normal and easy just to see the difference. And on easy, it'll run you, I guess, 20 to 30 hours to complete, because there's going to be some grinding areas. Probably more on normal and hard, because you're having to contend with longer, more difficult battles. And then after you beat the game, there is a new game plus mode where you get to carry things forward, or a continuation mode where you can do the rest of your missions and just sort of wander around without having to deal with any of the main story elements. I'm not sure if there's going to be DLC coming out afterwards, but there could be. There's a lot to this game that I can't even get into in this review, but it's definitely one of the biggest surprises of the year, and I've been very, very, very happy with it. I would honestly say it's a must-buy. It's retailing for, you know, your 60 or 80 Canadian out there. It is definitely worth picking up. And again, it's not something I think that most people saw on the radar, or they just see it and go, oh, it's another anime adaptation game, it's going to be a piece of crap. No. This is a very, very good game, and I highly recommend it. So that's Fist of the North Star, Lost Paradise, brought to you by Sega.
And that's the kind of show it has been here on Twig. Big thanks to Alex for coming out this week, and Tristan for producing his review of Destiny 2 Forsaken. I hope you've had a chance to check out some of the reviews we've done on this show, such as the aforementioned Destiny, Disgaea 2, or 1 remastered, sorry. And we just had Fist of the North Star from Sega. Also, hopefully you're celebrating today, like I said, your Thanksgiving or Columbus Day or Indigenous People's Day, which I think is the new official name for it, but I don't know. I'm not from the States. I couldn't tell you.
It's not called Big Fucking Indian Day?
No, it's not called Big Fucking Indian Day. Though I am a big fucking Indian.
Or no, that's your birthday.
That's true, yeah. October 20th. Looking forward to turning 37 in a row.
You're fucking old.
I'm fucking ancient. I know, right? So hopefully that weekend we will still have a show. It may be a shortened show, but we will have one for sure. Coming up on the site this week, I'm finally hoping to get that botched role I've been promising for weeks. I finally have an idea of what I want to say on it. It's going to be DM tips for basically kind of keeping your ideas fresh, keeping your lore entertaining and accessible. As I'm running into some of these, problem is not the right word, these complications with Cambridge Season 2 for Terrible Warriors, which hopefully you're listening over on TerribleWarriors.com. The Cambridge Chronicles is currently playing Avengers Aftermath, which is our Marvel one-shot adventure using the TSR system from the 1980s. What do you got coming up on the show this week, Alex?
I'm going to do a second part follow-up to the WWE Super Showdown predictions I had. Probably throw a review or two in there because, again, it's Broke-tober and there's a million things to be reviewing.
Oh, my God.
And then I might be putting together a Turtle Treasure depending on how many more reviews we have, because we're recording more today, I believe.
Yep, we got a lot more stuff coming up this week. We're going to be reviewing Laser Blast, which is a classic MST3K episode, but we're going to kind of give our spin on it. We're also going to be reviewing
Streets of Vengeance,
which was surprisingly entertaining, but we'll talk about more about that in our review.
And then maybe some commentaries or something.
Yeah, we'll figure out something as we enjoy our last day of the long weekend here in Canada. So like I said, guys, hope you've had a safe and happy turkey weekend. So be kind, be cool, be considerate to everybody you meet. Until next time, we have been
Alex.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying live free or die hard. We'll catch you guys again next week right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Well, kids, that's enough for one night, eh?
You know, I don't think this show is suitable for children.
I don't think this show is suitable for anybody.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear something like this.
Insert a clip here, you dick.
Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net for more geek content. And subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Follow and message us on Twitter at thisweekingeek. And check out our Instagram at @twig_official_podcast. If you're the good old-fashioned email type, send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
We now join America's most popular show already in progress. Everybody loves Hypnotoad.